It's time for the Maya AgLife Daily News Report. Welcome to this episode, everyone. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to regional and national agricultural news, we'll bring you feature reports, including one from Taylor Chalstrom, who talks about things that your irrigation scheduler should know. The show will begin with regional ag news right after this word from our sponsor.
Unsure of your naval orange worm program? No worries now with Rango, a proven solution to protect your orchard and hull split from naval orange worm. Rango is an OMRI-listed broad-spectrum biopesticide with no known resistance, making it an excellent rotation and tank mix partner for both conventional and organic growers. Partner with Rango today. Contact your PCA, local dealer, or visit rangonow.com. Rango, no worries now.
In regional agricultural news, the California Milk Advisory Board has announced the winner of its second California Dairy Sustainability Award, Calgren Dairy Fuels LLC, in recognition of its partnership with Mass Energy Works Incorporated to create a 22-mile dairy digester pipeline cluster to efficiently collect dairy biogas from California Dairy Farm Partners and upgrade and inject it into a utility pipeline owned by Southern California Gas Company. The award was presented by CMAB during the third California Dairy Sustainability Summit in partnership with the California Dairy Research Foundation and the California Dairy Quality Assurance Program. The Calgren project was the first in California to upgrade dairy biogas for utility pipeline injection and the largest collective dairy biogas operation in the U.S. 15 California dairy family farms are participating in the first phase of the project, which makes compressed natural gas available as fuel for heavy-duty trucks, replacing diesel, effectively removing 150,000 tons of carbon dioxide equivalent greenhouse gases from the environment and displacing more than 23 million gallons of fossil fuel-based transportation fuel annually. According to the Blue Book Produce IQ Index, spring's warmth is bringing crops to a full harvest quickly. Declining prices are led by limes, most melons, broccoli, peppers, and cucumbers. Even avocados are enjoying a brief break from ever-climbing prices, though complete respite is expected to hold out until June. On the other hand, cherries from California are beginning their season swinging at $70 per 16-pound case for 11-row size. The larger cherries, 10-row, are trading for around $78, and a smaller size, 12-row, can be had for $32. Overall, supply is expected to decrease from last year's bumper crop due to a late freeze impacting the more northern growing regions. Prices typically fall from the start of the season until the end as the early mover average wears off and the volume accelerates. As for limes, it has not been abnormal for limes to reach $40 a case before falling to $10 by early June. However, this winter season has been elevated to extreme altitude, over $60 a case due to the shortage of larger fruit. After an extended battering since January, exhausted buyers are eager for a return to normalcy. Recent rains are helping fruit size, and prices are dropping faster than usual. Good supplies of seedless watermelon in South Florida are sinking prices, currently 22 to 23 cents a pound. Domestic watermelon prices and quality have a wider range as growers are fragmented. Unlike other commodities such as corn, watermelon growers are less consolidated and can be less disciplined regarding price. Southern California Desert Water Districts with aging or failing infrastructure won big federal funding recently, with more than $100 million allocated for major dam and irrigation canal upgrades that will benefit the Coachella Valley and Imperial County. The projects are part of $240 million awarded from bipartisan infrastructure law funds by the U.S. Department of the Interior. Among the biggest beneficiaries is the Coachella Valley Water District, which will get $60 million for lateral replacement irrigation pipelines and more for work on the Coachella Canal. Nearly 60,000 irrigated acres of fruits and vegetables and forage crops with a value of $574 million were produced last year in the region, according to CVWD's annual agricultural report. Clean, reliable water piped in from the Colorado River system is essential for those crops. CVWD's entire distribution system of the Coachella branch of the All-American Canal is pipeline buried underground. The funds will pay for replacement pipelines for irrigation. And in a news release, Interior officials said CVWD had been proactive in identifying critical capital projects in the area. Without timely replacement, meeting water deliveries could be completely jeopardized due to lack of redundancy in the design of the system, according to the Interior Department. These projects have been designed and are shovel-ready. They will mitigate existing failures, provide more durable materials, and reduce losses due to the age of the system. Over the course of more than 18 months, a group of viticulturalists and vineyard owners have been working together to research both the benefits of and a process for establishing a wine grape pest and disease control district in Sonoma County. They've engaged in research and have discussed their effort with elected and appointed Sonoma County officials, University of California Cooperative Extension and UCANR, Napa County Agricultural Commissioner's Office, Napa County Wine Grape Pest and Disease Control District Board of Directors, state legislatures, and other pest control districts throughout California. The California Wine Grape Pest and Disease Control District law enables owners of wine grape acreage within Sonoma County to petition the Sonoma County Board of Supervisors to acknowledge and establish a wine grape pest and disease control district. The Sonoma County Wine Grape Pest and Disease Control District Coalition is organizing a petition effort for the Sonoma County Board of Supervisors. Sonoma wine grape growers recently received a letter and a petition of support, plus frequently asked questions about the functionality of the special district. They are being asked to read through the benefits of such a district, visit the new Sonoma County Wine Grape Pest and Disease Control District Coalition website, review what Napa's WGPDCD has been working on for the last 20 years, and if they agree, growers are then asked for support in petitioning the Board of Supervisors to allow them to form one in this Sonoma County, which would allow growers to then collaborate in ongoing pest control efforts, not only with each other, but with neighboring districts to form area-wide protection from harmful pests.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
No one in charge of irrigating tree nut orchards for growth and productivity assumes it's a simple task. All parts of the water delivery system, the variability of orchard soils, and the orchard environment must be considered for optimal irrigation. The relationship between each of these components is critical. A failure of one can compromise the entire system. Much like the crop nutrition rule, the right amount of water at the right rate and at the right time contributes to efficient use of water, along with tree health and yield. In addition, all of the components of a good irrigation system need to be addressed, including routine maintenance. At the top of the list is understanding the application rate of the system. Wilbur Ellis's Matt Comrie said that this is the backbone of any sound irrigation program.
The way I think of it or look at it is ETC is really the demand, right? So we're estimating demand. And the application rate is then the supply, right? So when we use application rates in conjunction with ETC, we're basically reconciling demand, ETC, with how much our irrigation system can supply over a period of time. And typically I boil it when I'm doing irrigation scheduling for some of our growers, I'll boil it down to how many acre inches we're applying per hour. So then what we can do is we can look on a variety of resources that will estimate ETC for us. And then what we can do is just via arithmetic, we can figure out how many hours of irrigation set runtime is needed to effectively match supply with demand. So I think that is in my mind is the backbone of any sound irrigation scheduling is understanding what the application rate is and then effectively matching that with the estimated demand.
Another factor to be aware of when creating an irrigation schedule is distribution uniformity. Comrie said irrigation managers should be aware of DU throughout the orchard and realize that, given the variability in soils and topography, it may be a challenge to achieve. Regular system checks done by sampling output over time and comparing with the advertised emitter flow rate can be a simple way of getting a handle on the true water application rate and distribution uniformity in an orchard.
If you can't measure it, you can't manage it, right? So if there is a variance or a wide variation in the distribution across a given irrigation set, then by definition, you're over irrigating some areas and under irrigating others, and with the same runtime. And that can become particularly problematic in different time periods or different growth stages. Over irrigating is a serious problem, particularly early on for orchard crops. You know, we can induce various infections and root problems by doing so. And conversely, if we're in the summer period, we can greatly negatively impact crop quality by under irrigating significantly. So there are ramifications of having a poor DU. And I think it's gotten some serious attention here in the past, few years. I think growers are really starting to understand the ramifications behind having a poor distribution uniformity. And water quality has definitely played a role. You know, when salinity is becoming more and more a problem, particularly in groundwater, and you couple that with a low flow or a low output irrigation system, and I'm talking about drip systems or micro fans or micro jets, just a small buildup or scaling of the orifice or the emitter can cause dramatic changes in our application rates that we may or may not know of going into it, because typically an irrigator is still going to see a wetting pattern. That wetting pattern may or may not have shrunk or grown in size. So surface level or on face value, we could think that we're irrigating properly, when in fact, again, going back to, unless we actually measure it, we don't know. And also really just an indicator of when maintenance is needed. Ideally we'd like to see an ongoing maintenance, with various line cleaners and such, acids that will help prevent, let's say a high bicarbonate load from scaling or causing any problems. But also, I see a lot of water samples that don't come back with iron or manganese being tested, which can also cause plugging because it's very reactive in alkaline water sources and can produce precipitates just like lime, just like bicarbonates can. So really, by measuring distribution uniformity, we can then better diagnose if we have problems later on down the road, and can help guide our maintenance decisions for our irrigation system also.
Another factor that plays into irrigation scheduling that has become a huge issue in recent years with the perennial drought is soil salinity. Comrie said drought has encouraged the salinization of soils in many areas of California where tree nuts are grown. When salinity builds up in the soils, water use and crop growth are impacted. And the common approach to mitigating salinity risk is to use a leaching fraction to help flush salts out of the root zone. Comrie also noted that addressing soil salinity is one of the more difficult things to address when scheduling an irrigation.
The salinization, particularly in soils that we're seeing over recent years, is due to a lack of water, right? So drought, poor rainfall in the winters that we used to be able to rely on as a de facto leaching fraction, right? That would help prevent the accumulation of salts within the root zone. And when we don't have that, coupled with water quality getting worse, salinity becoming an increasing problem in our water sources, you know, there is, I don't want to say there's nothing that a grower can do, but when a grower is strapped with low water supply, you know, it's not as easy as implementing a leaching fraction, implementing an in-season leaching fraction. So, you know, what I would say the primary calls or causes of issues due to salinization, I'm talking bulk salinity, not, you know, sodium chloride or boron, any one of those. I'm talking just an overall salinization, bulk salinity issue. One thing growers can do is adjust irrigation interval, meaning should not necessarily over apply water, but they can, if they have the flexibility in their system to do so, shorten up the watering interval and keep soils at field capacity longer. So keep that tank in some of the shallower depths of soil fuller longer, which then makes it easier for crops to extract that water from the soil. So that's one thing we can do to help. But again, I think it's primarily going to be growers with well water or wells out in their orchards. I would really encourage growers to adopt dormant season leaching this fall. Again, we can manipulate our irrigation interval a little bit to help ease some of that pain throughout this season. But I would encourage growers if with working with some of their consultants, they do see salt buildup in their soils to pre-irrigate ahead of irrigation events this fall or this winter when, I get this isn't going to work for everybody, but if we can pre-irrigate ahead of, let's say, a winter rain that's going to provide, I don't know, an inch and a half of water, we can then use that clean water that's falling from the sky as our leaching water and help to leach some of those salts out of our soil profile.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
In national agricultural news, the Department of Agriculture says the first round of funding through the Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities received more than 450 proposals, ranging from $5 million to $100 million each. The deadline for the proposals closed last Friday. The applications USDA received came from more than 350 groups across various sectors. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says the funding opportunity has created tremendous interest from a diverse cross-section of groups from across the country. Proposals in the first funding pool include large-scale pilot projects that emphasize the greenhouse gas benefits of climate-smart commodity production and include direct meaningful benefits to a representative cross-section of production agriculture. Over the next few months, USDA will evaluate the applications and rank them based on the technical criteria provided in the funding opportunity. Awards for the first round of funding are anticipated later this summer. The deadline for the second round of funding is Friday, June 10th. The National Farmers Union has welcomed this week's Affordability Connectivity Program announced by the White House. The program seeks to close the U.S. digital divide by making reliable, high-speed internet affordable to many families in rural and urban communities. The program will provide an estimated 48 million qualifying families with a $30 a month benefit to apply towards a high-speed plan and get it at zero cost. NFU President Rob LaRue says reliable and affordable high-speed internet is a necessity in today's world, whether you're a farmer or rancher accessing markets and precision agriculture, or you and your family are connecting to your schools and jobs. The bipartisan infrastructure law included $65 billion to make sure we expand access to broadband internet in every region of the country. President Joe Biden announcing the program earlier this week said broadband, among other things, allows farmers to use precision agriculture technology to improve their yields. Participating providers include AT&T, Verizon, Cox, Comcast, and other providers who serve rural communities. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says tens of thousands of farmers have fallen on hard times and need help now. It was an unusually emotional moment for Secretary Vilsack as he broke from script before the Senate Ag Appropriations Panel on Tuesday.
There are 61,670 farm families in America today that are on the brink. 61,670 farm families that are either delinquent in their loans to USDA, are bankrupt, or are pending foreclosure.
For Vilsack, it's personal.
I represented farmers during the 1980s as a small town lawyer. I can tell you the pain. I can tell you the stress. I can tell you the decisions that folks make under these circumstances. I can tell you a very tragic decision. I represented farmers during the 1980s as a small town lawyer. I can tell you the pain. I can tell you the stress. I can tell you the decisions that folks make under these circumstances. I can tell you very tragic decisions that they make.
Vilsack urged ag appropriators to help find ways to save these producers.
And I sincerely hope that we can work collaboratively together in a bipartisan way to make sure that they have a hopeful future as opposed to one that is currently stress-filled today.
Made worse by today's record high gas, diesel, and fertilizer prices as the USDA looks into fertilizer costs.
See what we could do here in the United States to produce more fertilizer. We're also working with producers on crop choice and conservation practices that could potentially reduce fertilizer use. We're also focusing on a split nitrogen policy for crop insurance that will basically cover crop losses if you decide to half your nitrogen application.
And Vilsack says USDA is working with state attorney generals to ensure fertilizer prices are legitimate, pointing to research that shows those prices rising with crop prices, something he complains should not happen. The American Farm Bureau Federation welcomed the Securities and Exchange Commission's comment period extension for a proposed rule. The group say they need more time to evaluate the enhancement and standardization of climate-related disclosures for investors rule. The proposal would require public companies to report on Scope 3 emissions, which result from activities from assets not owned or controlled by a publicly traded company but contribute to its value chain. While farmers and ranchers would not be required to report directly to the SEC, they provide almost every raw product that goes into the food supply chain, according to AFBF President Zippy Duvall. He says America's farmers and ranchers need time to fully understand the consequences of this 510-page proposal. Bart Kenner, USDA economist, is in with a rundown of U.S. agricultural exports and imports for the first 6 months of the 2022 fiscal year.
The fiscal year to date, October through March 2022, agricultural exports were $101.8 billion compared to $92.3 billion this time last year for an increase of 10%. Agricultural imports were $92.8 billion year to date 2022 compared to $76.9 billion this time last year for an increase of 21% for a total trade balance of $9 billion. Compared to $15.5 billion this time last year, which is a 42% decrease.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
Some tree nut orchards in the state have been implementing hedgerows into their operations in order to enhance agricultural resilience to benefit riparian and wildlife corridors, and it looks like that trend is spreading outside of the tree nut industry. A hedgerow project in Fillmore, California is using hedgerows on an organic avocado farm. This project borders the Santa Clara River and is situated adjacent to a wildlife corridor. Ventura County Resource Conservation District planted two hedgerows alongside of the windrows made up of native willows, which will serve as added contiguous habitat for wildlife along the Santa Clara River and will provide ecological benefits to the avocados. The project is funded through the Department of Conservation through the Working Lands Riparian Grant Program to protect, restore, and enhance riparian corridors on agricultural lands.
So there was already an established willow windrow, and so we complemented those resources by planting some native pollinator specific plants alongside the willow windrows, just to provide some additional habitat. And it was something that the growers were interested in. There's also a riparian corridor right across the street. So we're hoping that this is gonna add to that habitat connectivity throughout Fillmore and create additional resources for those things moving through the riparian corridor and to the river.
That was Desiree Braga, resource conservation technician with the Ventura County Resource Conservation District and lead on the project. She discussed the monitoring phase, which is being used to tell how beneficial the hedgerows are to the riparian habitats and the ecosystem as a whole. The monitoring phase will use vertebrate, invertebrate, and floral surveys.
The objective of the floral monitoring is to kind of assess the survivability and success rate of the newly planted hedgerows. That includes photo points as kind of a visual representation of how these hedgerows are growing and what they look like. And then we also have quadrant surveys, and these are to measure growth and survivorship. The faunal monitoring includes avian surveys, and these are kind of direct and indirect observations of evidence for the use of the hedgerows by the wildlife. So the avian surveys will be performed before any other monitoring in order to make sure that those are done early in the morning and to make sure that we're not flushing any avian species while we're doing the other surveys. And then we have different types of invertebrate surveys. So this was kind of, I wanted to see the plant species associations with the invertebrates. So we're doing that by quadrant surveys and transect as well. The transect, we're just kind of walking a line and marking the native versus the native bees versus honeybees. And then the quadrant surveys is kind of marking any pollinator that's using these resources and which species that they're targeting. So if we're saying, oh, this coast sunflower is targeted more by honeybees, then it's kind of something to keep in mind for when we're doing different species palettes for other hedgerows.
For now, the group will continue to test different species in the hedgerows, some of which include California buckwheat, Oregon grape, coast sunflower, elderberry, and California glory flannel bush.
It's really nice soil, so we're seeing what grows better, what grows faster, and what the bloom times are. That way, for each hedgerow project, we can kind of modify that list and be able to get the most pollinator resources, habitat, food resources for invertebrates as well as vertebrates and anything wanting to use the hedgerows. So it's pretty cool to see lots of interest in using these conservation practices, and it's giving the crops ecological benefits as well as other flora and fauna that need these resources as well.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.